Over the past 5 years, bees have been disappearing from their hives in significant numbers, and there's no clear explanation of why. Many believe that bees are a barometer of the health of the planet, and what's being called colony collapse disorder raises questions about the use of pesticides, genetically modified crops, and the industrialization of farming and beekeeping. For today's Please Explain segment, Taggart Siegel, the director of the documentary Queen of the Sun, and John Betts, the film's producer, tell us why honeybees are important to human life and agriculture, look into the suspected causes of colony collapse and honeybee deaths, and tell us how some devoted beekeepers are trying to save them. Queen of the Sun opens tonight at the Cinema Village, and I'm very pleased to welcome Taggart Siegel and John Betts to our show. Hello.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you, Leonard.
Taggart, what is colony collapse disorder? Is it something that's only occurred in recent years?
It's actually a new phenomenon. That's why they call it colony collapse disorder. And it's a phenomenon where bees disappear from their hive. There's no honey. I mean, the honey's there, the queen's there, but all the worker bees, the females, have disappeared.
They go out searching for nectar and then don't return to the hive?
Yeah, they do not return to the hive, which is very different from a lot of the other decline of over the last 100 years. There have been times where bees have declined, but they usually die near the beehive. But this one is like they actually disappear and like they don't come back.
Like,
and
they got lost?
They got lost. Like they could not navigate back, and it could be possibly the neonicotinoids, which they've done some research and found that it has a lot of the neonicotinoids in their in their blood.
John, what's neonicotinoids?
Neonicotinoid pesticides are a form of pesticide that's been used widely, not only in the U.S., but in other, you know, and across Europe as well. And there's a few key, you know, pesticides within this group, such as clothianidin, that have been major suspects for colony collapse because these pesticides have shown to affect the memory centers of the bee and could affect their ability to navigate. So as Taggart was saying, the hypothesis is that these pesticides could be building up in the bee system. They go and they pollinate different crops that have these pesticides in perhaps trace amounts, perhaps larger, and this buildup over time eventually reaches sort of a critical mass.
Well, one beekeeper described pesticides as being like nerve gas, but you say this builds up over time. We've only been seeing colony collapse disorder in the last 6 years or so, but pesticides have been used for quite a long time, haven't they?
Well, these are different pesticides. These neonicotinoids are relatively new on the market. And I think that's the effects that we see now, that they are so toxic to bees. And they're also built into the seeds of you know, BT corn and soybean. And the seed releases the pesticides into the plant. And the corn with the pollen on it, the bees will come to that pollen and take some of the pollen back, and it'll have tons of pesticides in it.
So those are genetically modified plants?
Yes, they are.
So the two things have been developed simultaneously?
Yes. Monsanto developed a seed where it's built-in pesticide in the seed. So when it grows, it releases all these pesticides.
Now, John, bees play such an important role in agriculture. Why would anyone in farming want to do anything that would kill them off?
Well, the issue comes into play with how we grow our food, and it's not so much that people have it out for the bee, because obviously our crops are dependent on pollinators. The issue is that we grow foods in such a way that they become these treasure troves for pests. We grow one crop in hundreds of acres, and so this one pest has this feast, and it can come to this one area, so we have to spray pesticides on that area. A key example that we show in Queen of the Sun is the almond crops in the Central Valley of California, where you have a crop the size of Rhode Island through the Central Valley of California. And this crop has to be sprayed in order to keep these pests away. And they do it in the off times, but then they have to truck bees in from all over the United States. Three-quarters of the bees in the United States come to the almond fields for this one event and pollinate these trees. And there are trace amounts of these pesticides, sometimes more than that, left over. And it's affecting the bees along with a lot of other issues. So it's the way we've grown food that is really part of the huge problem for bees here, because that's what's created this need for pesticides.
And then they truck in these bees, and there are different types of bees. They mingle. You mentioned that they even bring some bees from Australia. Is that a bad thing?
Well, there was a shortage in 2006, 2007, where there was a shortage of bees. So they flew them on 747s from Australia to provide for the almond pollination section. But what they brought with them was a virus called acute paralysis syndrome, and Israel acute paralysis syndrome. And it's something that really affects bees. And so all these bees are intermingling. And as Michael Pollan says, it's like a bee bordello, because they all come in and intermixing and spreading diseases and things.
Now, why wouldn't the almond growers simply put flowers alongside the trees, and that would draw the bees naturally, wouldn't it?
Will they use?
Go ahead, John.
Well, that's one of the real issues, is that that would make the most sense, right? But the problem is twofold. One is that you would have to plant a fairly large amount of flowers. You'd have to leave these hedgerows open that don't get sprayed, where wildflowers can grow, or where you can plant flowers that augment the environment for the bees. But you'd have to plant a fairly large amount, and that's a profit hit for the farmers. And additionally, the way that these crops are kept, there's an intense amount of cultivating, spraying, different things, and they don't want other crops. In fact, when we were filming in the almond fields, one farmer that we spoke to, the beekeeper said, I said, what are these little flowers that are growing in between the trees? And the beekeeper said, those are great for bees. We love those. And then the farmer immediately said, oh, those, I want to get rid of those. Those are a problem for us. So there's, they don't want to have any other factors coming into the equation. But then on the other side of things, you're getting this huge problem now where the prices of bees are skyrocketing for these almond farmers, and the demand, the supply is not there, and the demand is very great.
Well, these bees are, their hives are packed up. They're moved on huge trucks from state to state. Does this have a traumatic impact on the bees?
Well, in fact, they're fed corn syrup when they arrive.
Now, why would they be given corn syrup when they produce a sweet substance of their own?
Well, that's the big question, is that they take all their honey, and then they leave them with nothing. So what the beekeepers do, the commercial beekeepers, they supplement them with genetically modified corn syrup. And as Michael Pollan says in the film, there's nothing more viscerally offensive than feeding the creators of honey genetically modified corn syrup. And so it's really hard on their immune system, and bees are being hit in so many different ways.
And then they're also sometimes being given antibiotics.
Yes. So antibiotics, it's the same what we do to ourselves, we're trying to do with the bees. If there's a pathogen, we try to knock it out with antibiotics. If there's a varroa mite, we try to put harsh chemicals, a miticide, kind of like killing cockroaches in New York City. You're trying to kill these mites that are in the hive. But in India, where they didn't have any money to use these chemicals, the bee and the mite coexist and co-adapted. And it's a much healthier approach than sticking miticide into the hive, where now the mites have become super mites.
So is the big problem only in the United States?
It's all over the world now. It's all
because,
over Europe.
Because beekeepers in Europe are doing the same sorts of things that American beekeepers are doing?
Yes. And in New Zealand, they now have colony collapse disorder too, which it wasn't there last year.
You made the film.
Yeah.
They were very proud of the fact that it hadn't affected them.
Yeah. But it turned out, what I found out is that they are using the neonicotinoids in that country too, the pesticides that kill bees.
We're talking about the disappearance of honeybees and other bees as part of today's Please Explain. And you can join the conversation by giving us a call at 646-829-3985. That's 646-829-3985. Excuse me. Or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And my guests are Taggart Siegel, who's director of a new film called Queen of the Sun, and John Betts, who's the producer of the film, which opens at the Cinema Village today at 22 East 12th Street. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. The film looks at the importance of bees throughout history, John. How long have humans been cultivating bees for honey?
Pretty much ever since we've been around, you know, for hundreds of thousands of years, you know, some would say, and it goes back to honey hunters who would climb into trees and find these beehives and pull out, you know, the honeycomb for its source of sweetness. And then through history, we moved to the Egyptians and the Greeks, both who deeply revered bees. The Egyptians, you'll have hieroglyphs on tombs and of bees, and they put honey in King Tut's tomb, for instance, something we show in the film. And that honey's a natural preservative. So even now, when you open that tomb, that honey is still edible. So it's there's this incredible kind of link between bees and man throughout history. The monks used to be the keepers of beehives throughout Europe, and the hives were revered for two reasons. One is that honey, obviously being the first source of sweetness, like I said earlier, but also beeswax being one of the first sources for light. So we really owe our ability to read and write at night, and also this appreciation for sweetness to the bees.
And then, of course, they pollinate plants, which is responsible for at least 40% of all the things that we eat. But Taggart, what's in it for the bees? Why do they make the honey? They don't need all the honey they produce, do they?
Well, honey is their source of food. So they put the honey in the hexagonal forms that they create out of the beeswax. Beeswax is made from the abdomen of the bee. They extract it, and the bees take that little bit of beeswax and create that hexagonal form. And then that's where they store the honey. That's where they lay the larvae. The queen will lay up to 1,500 eggs a day, or 2,000, which is more than her body weight. So she's putting the larvae inside that hexagonal form. And then the bee will put a little bit of pollen, a little bit of honey. So when that baby is born, it'll eat the honey. But then it's also they build up their honey source so they could survive during the winter. You know, they need a lot of honey in the wintertime also.
So when we take honey from them, are we stealing their food, or are they just encouraged to go out and get more honey?
Well, a lot of times there's no honey to be made because the flowers aren't blossoming. So if you take honey in the fall time and take too much, they could die in the wintertime unless you feed them corn syrup or sugar that often beekeepers do.
Now, why is the honeycomb hexagonal and in the pictures that you show so perfect that they look like they've been stamped out by a machine? John? Do you know?
Well, in some cases, the honeycomb have actually been stamped out by a machine. You can get hives that have these pre-formatted wax combs, and that's a whole other issue to go into. It's much better for the bees to build their own combs. But bees do build these just incredibly perfect, intricate combs, and it's in some ways a mystery as to why that hexagon shape is the shape they use. But it's an incredibly strong shape, incredibly durable, and works extremely well for the hive. They build it to a perfect size. If you let bees build their own comb in top bar hives, for instance, or in Langstroth hives where you just have the bar and you let them build the comb themselves, they will build it to the exactly perfect size for their larvae to prevent diseases and pests from getting into those combs. So it's really a wonder.
Beehives have been called superorganisms. What does that mean, Taggart?
Superorganisms is when a bee can't live, a single bee cannot live on its own. If you gave it enough food, enough water, enough warmth, that bee would still die if it wasn't with the whole hive. So a superorganism is one contained bee unit where there's 30, 40,000 bees, and that's seen as one. And that's a superorganism. And it's an amazing thing because they live from year to year as a family.
And they communicate through dancing? You show the waggle dance in your film.
The waggle dance is just incredible because that's where they could find out where the source of food is. And they waggle accordingly to the direction that they need to fly, the distance. And it's this incredible form of communication. If you think about it, it's like a language that is highly, highly developed.
And you say in the film, the intensity of the dance suggests just how good the stuff is out there to be gotten. If it's more intense, then there's a lot more pollen out there than if it's kind of like, oh, well.
Yeah, their dance is a beautiful thing to see, and they get really excited about it when there's a good source.
Now we're talking about honeybees. Are those the only bees that are suffering right now?
No, there's so many. I think something that's so important to realize is honeybees are just a percentage of all of the bees that we rely on for pollination, and in fact, all the insects we rely on pollination. Beetles pollinate, flies pollinate. So there are many, many insects that we owe our food to, and not only our food, but our forests and our environments. So, you know, practically everything out there, at least a large percentage of what's out there, relies on these insects to pollinate, everything that's not wind pollinated. And we've been endangering these other native bees as well, such as bumblebees. They're finding that certain species of bumblebees are disappearing. And, you know, if there's anything more kind of tragic, it's the idea of bumblebees, some of the cutest insects I can think of, disappearing. And they're disappearing due to habitat loss and these same pesticide use problems, but largely because we're just eliminating these diverse environments where they used to live freely.
And what about other pollinators like butterflies? Is that a problem? Are they also disappearing?
Butterflies are having a hard time, too. The Marnik butterfly is suffering because of these, thousands and thousands of acres of genetically modified crops that are planted. They're looking for pollen, and if they feed off the pollen of these pesticide-ridden pollen, you know, off corn or anything, their immune system's going to be hurt, too.
So we depend on bees and butterflies and other insects, and we're doing everything possible to kill them.
It's just so ironic. You just do not understand, because a bee is what could bring one seed could turn into millions of seed. Vandana Shiva talks about that in the film. It's a beautiful thing that we've created a sense of scarcity now, because with Monsanto, they own the seed, and there's only one seed, and it doesn't multiply. So it's against nature. So we need to, like, really get nature really built up again to provide habitats for these bees.
We're talking about the disappearance of bees with the director and producer of a new film called Queen of the Sun, which opens today at the Cinema Village at 22 East 12th Street. They are Taggart Siegel, the director, John Betts, the producer. They both edited the film. If you have any questions, you can give us a call at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org, and we'll be right back after this. We're back with Please Explain, looking at the disappearance of bees with the director and producer of a film called Queen of the Sun. Taggart Siegel is the director. John Betts, the producer. The film opens today at the Cinema Village at 22 East 12th Street. And we are taking your calls at 646-829-3985. Or you can leave us a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. I have lots of questions still to be asked, but let's go to some of our listeners, okay? We begin with Jan from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have two quick things. It's amazing. Papaya is now genetically engineered, and 2 years ago I had to stop drinking it, and I tried it the other day for my girlfriend to drink, and I had to spill it right out. It made me feel so horrible. Now, my question for you is also, do you think those cell phone towers have anything to do with the bees not showing back?
There is concern now about radiation coming from cell phones to our heads. I don't know how many cell phone towers are there in that almond tree area.
I don't think there'd be that many, but there is some research that has just come out from Switzerland that shows that cell phones are having some detrimental effect on honeybees, and they put the actual cell phone up to the honeybee hive, and then others that didn't have it, and the one that had the cell phone on it actually died out, disappeared. So there's a great effect from radiation that's out there. Cell phone is just one of those contributing factors to colony collapse disorder.
I'd imagine electric power lines would also be a problem.
I'm not sure how it affects them, but they're very sensitive creatures, and they definitely are affected by everything.
Let's take another call. Rich from Huntington, Long Island. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I happen to be a beekeeper. I run 50 colonies, and I wanted to talk about the neonicotinoids. But first, you mentioned the cell towers. One of my best apiaries is sitting right underneath the cell tower. It has no effect whatsoever. The bees do fine there. I think the test in Switzerland, who's going to normally put a cell phone into a beehive? I couldn't see that happening. So I don't see the effect of cell phones.
Well, maybe the bees got a call.
Well, bees do a lot of communicating, and I'd be afraid to see the bill at the end of the month.
Well, what kind of – are you a commercial beekeeper, or are you one of these people who is trying to be as organic and natural as possible?
Yeah, that's true. And I run about 50 hives, so at my level they call me a sideliner. But I just wanted to make an interesting point. Here on Long Island, neonicotinoids have been outlawed to homeowners because they were finding it in the groundwater. So they first took it away from the homeowner, so you can't buy it at Home Depot. There's a product made by Bayer called Grubex, and that's a neonicotinoid. It has imidacloprid in it, and that's a neonicotinoid product. Mm-hmm. And they can't use it on Long Island, so our bees are doing quite well here. I haven't seen any cases of colony collapse disorder here.
Now, Rich, I've never understood this. Why do beekeepers spray the hives with smoke?
Well, it calms them down before you open the hive. It sort of masks, it does two things. It masks their alarm odor so they don't get upset when you open the hive. You want to avoid getting stung. And there's a theory that because we can watch the bees start to engorge themselves with honey when they sense that smoke. And the theory is that they're preparing to leave the hive in case there's a forest fire. So they're engorging themselves with honey in case they have to take their food with them.
Uh-huh.
And then the bees act like you and I would act after a big Thanksgiving dinner, you know? We don't want to bother anybody. Mm. So.
That's great.
But do you ever get stung?
Thousands of times.
Uh-huh.
We've been doing it for 35 years. So it's,
that's great. These things
are actually therapeutic, but that's a whole other subject.
Well, thank you so much for your call. Oh, although maybe you want to stay there for a moment, because one of the other issues that the film deals with, and I'll ask my guests about it first, is the way queens are being bred. Can you talk about that a bit, Taggart?
Well, the way that Queen of the Sun looked at queen breeding was through the eyes of, like, Rudolf Steiner in 1923 said that if we continue the practice of queen breeding and sort of more industrialized beekeeping and farming, the bees could die out in 80 to 100 years. So he was talking to a beekeeper at that time in 1923 and saw that this new form of breeding was taking place not only in cows and chickens, but also in bees. And he said it's going to affect them down the line. And so what we've been doing over the years is breeding queens, and we're
through artificial insemination,
not as much that way, but more just queen breeding. So there's a lot more queens that man produces, and it weakens the genetic stock over time. And that's, you know, we bred for like a very nice bee, a bee that you could be around without being stung, and it's, we've kind of bred out some of their vitality, where the queen only lives less than a year sometimes. But they used to live 3 to 4 years. So something.
But why do we
on.
Have to do it? Doesn't the queen in the hive create the next queen all by herself?
She does. And one of the issues is that she creates the best queen for that microclimate, for that area. Mm-hmm. So there, it's really the most she's breeding for the most hardy bee. And if we would just let nature do its job, we would have bees that would not only adapt but last in the long term. But we like to breed for bees that are the maximum productivity and the easiest bees to keep, rather than bees that are very defensive and sting a lot and maybe don't gather as much honey. So we have different motivations than the bees do as beekeepers oftentimes. And in fact, in a UN study, they found that in many industrialized countries, the bee breeding practices have hindered, not helped, the bees in those areas.
Rich, do you wind up bringing bees in? Do you buy queen bees?
Yes, we do occasionally, and we'll buy bees from down south early in the spring because they can produce more bees and queens when we can't. But in the long run, I try to breed local bees. My focus is really to breed a bee that is in tune with the local environment. If I buy a queen that's been bred in Georgia and try to get it through the winter here, the chances are lower than if I breed a local queen. And then we get wild swarms that emanate from hollow trees and bees that are living for years in a building, and I'll select queens from that source. But it's important that we do breed extra queens, because when in a natural environment, if the hive produces a new queen and that queen goes out on its first mating flight. By the way, queens mate in the air, not in the hive. They have to mate out in the air with a number of drones. And if that queen is on the way back and some bird eats the queen, mm-hmm. that hive then is doomed. So it's my job then to find that and then requeen that hive, because they can't produce another queen after that. There'll be no eggs left in the hive to produce a queen.
Thank you so much for calling us. By the way, the film shows that queen flying out of the hive and having some kind of sexual intercourse with a lot of different males. It's amazing the film didn't get an X rating, but you didn't mention the fact that they're vulnerable to birds. What we're seeing, as you said earlier, is that a lot of these queens are just being bred in queen bee farms, in effect, and then being introduced to different hives. Rich mentioned the swarms. We've been seeing a lot of swarms in the city and in the local area, and people are alarmed when they see them. Is this a bad thing?
Well, swarms are very safe. In fact, they're probably the safest time to be around bees without any gear. When they're swarming, they have a lot of honey in their belly, and they're looking for a new home. Their intention is to send the scouts out to find a new home, and that's the beauty between man and bees, is that here's this swarm. That's why beekeepers are always chasing swarms, because they got another, 20,000-30,000 bees that they could gather up and put into their beehive, and the bees are going to be happy too, because they found a new home.
Well, why are they out there all gathered in this big bundle hanging from a tree or a lamppost?
Because they've swarmed from the main hive, like the queen.
Was there overpopulation?
Well, the queen, yes. Their hive that they were living in got too full, and so what happens is they start breeding. A new queen is developed, and once that new queen is coming on, the old queen takes half the hive and goes on a swarm. So she's kind of left her house and given it to the next offspring. And in doing that, they're looking for a new home, and they're kind of in the unknown. And that's where beekeepers are so, lucky to find a swarm. And that's what I did recently in Portland, is to get a swarm. And I have bees in my backyard now from a swarm.
Milna asks, is the 2008 Farm Bill for Pollinator Conservation in effect? If so, little publicized yet, seems to hold so much promise for protecting all insect pollinators. I own property in Rhode Island and would love to put one or more of these programs into effect, but have had really had to scratch for to get any information.
It's really hard to find any information. In fact, the EPA has blocked releasing a document that said that these neonicotinoids, these pesticides, are dangerous to bees, and that these neonicotinoids have been banned in other countries, but we haven't quite figured out how to ban these pesticides. And so our government's being a little slow with helping out bees in a major way. Other countries are seen as a major crisis going on, and that's why the United Nations even calls it, you know, the writing's on the wall, that this is one of the most, it could be the most devastating thing going on because of a potential food crisis.
And Thelma wants to add to that. Hi, Thelma.
Hi, guys. How are you?
We're here. You want to start talking?
Yeah, I actually had a comment regarding the mono seed that you mentioned earlier in your conversation.
Go ahead.
And the reason that I wanted to say is basically that the mono seed could possibly create a very big financial crisis and in developing countries, because what has happened, I'm originally from Eastern Europe, from Western Balkans. So after the war, and the United States has provided a lot of seeds, actually sold the seeds to the farmers for them to grow crops. And what has happened at the end of the season is the farmers realize that the crops do not renew themselves. So they had to go buy these seeds over and over again, which in itself, you know, cuts into their profits, it cuts into the profitability of the whole venture. And more than one farmer has failed because of that reason.
Well, in India,
because we are, you know, messing with nature.
Yes, in India, this is a very serious situation. Monsanto came in and sold seeds to the farmers, and it's created so much problems when the harvest fails that the farmers go out of business, and the suicide rate. Vandana Shiva was just saying that over 200,000 people have died, committed suicide in India because of these, the failure of these seeds.
Now, the case is well made. How do people in the agricultural industry respond? Have they shown any interest in making changes to how they operate in order to protect the bees, which is in their best interests?
Well, my feeling is that they want to eliminate pollinators, so to speak, and create any plant that doesn't need pollination. So that's why they've created, like, soybeans that used to be pollinated by bees. Now they've created one that's not pollinated. They're trying to come up with an almond. I think they've already come up with an almond that doesn't need pollinating. And that's really a travesty against nature. Like,
yeah, why? What are we going to do about those flowers in our backyards?
Exactly.
We need those too, don't we? Let's take another call. Tricia from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Thanks for having this conversation. In the past two mornings, I think bees have been scouting my bathroom. My window is cracked, and I ushered them out. And I actually asked my husband, I said, what can we do? And that's my question to you. What can we do?
What can we do in what way? Like, to get the bees out?
As individuals.
Okay.
No, to save the bees, is what Tricia wants.
To fight Monsanto, to fight just, like, basically the insanity of the war against nature, as someone else put it.
Well, we're calling it Monsanity. John?
Yeah, I like that.
John?
Well, there's obviously a lot of different things you can do, but on different fronts. On one level, I think it's just wonderful to take what space you might have, and for some people it may be just a windowsill planter. For other people it might be starting a garden and plant herbs that you let go to flower that you kind of reserve for the bees and renew habitat for bees. And cities actually are one of the best places to do this because there's less pesticide use in cities. And so, you know, in New York, this would be a great thing for people to do. And I've heard New York honey is some of the best honey for this reason.
Absolutely. By the way, it's just recently been made legal to keep honeybees in the city. And if you go to the Green Market on 14th Street, there's somebody who has New York honey. And I'm telling you, it's just fabulous. But what's really fun is that bees congregate around that stall. They're all smelling the honey, and they don't bother anybody, but they sure seem to have a wonderful time there. Your film has some of the most beautiful images anybody could ever imagine. I should mention that as well, because you have a lot of pictures of bees going into the gorgeous flowers. The film is Queen of the Sun. Taggart Siegel is the director, John Betts, producer. They both were the editors of it, and it opens tonight at Cinema Village at 22 East 12th Street. Thank you both so much for being on today's Please Explain segment.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.